back to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. Today, coming to you live from the Minnesota State Capitol, I'm Gary Eichen. Today, we're tracking all those major issues that legislators have been debating since the legislative session began way back on February 1st. House Senate conference committees have reached agreement on most of those major issues, and now the full House and Senate will be voting on those bills throughout the day and presumably well into the night tonight. Time is running short. There is a sense of urgency here at the Capitol to finish up and go home. And today on Midday, we are focusing on what's in all those big bills, what's left to work out before the legislature can, in fact, adjourn. Minnesota Public Radio's political editor, Mike Mulcahy, has joined us here at our broadcast table at the State Capitol Rotunda. And, Mike, just to review here, are there any outstanding issues that the conferees, the House and Senate representatives, haven't been able to agree on yet?
Well, we know for sure that the big one that's still out is that supplemental spending bill that's affectionately known as the garbage bill. It's got the Health and Human Services spending and the environmental spending and the state government spending in it. So that one's still a little bit up in the air. I think they're scheduled to meet again at 2 o'clock. We do know that bonding is just about done, if not done already. Taxes is done. Education is done. The profile of learning is still an issue that's out there. But it looks like they can get it done tonight, meaning into the early morning hours.
And is there any real reason why they're planning to meet virtually all night to do this? It would seem on the face of it to make more sense in terms of reasoned discussion, reasoned decision-making, and so on, to meet for quite a long while today, go home, take a nap, get a good night's sleep, and come back and do it tomorrow again.
The legislature doesn't always do the reasonable thing. In fact, sometimes it seems like it seldom does. But the main reason, and we can talk about that with our next guest, the main reason is because anything they pass today, the governor only has 3 days to decide whether he will sign or veto it. And this is the last day they can do that. If they pass something after this, he'll get 14 days. And that would push them, that they want to come back and possibly override some vetoes. If they use that 14-day rule, that would push them very close to or beyond the constitutional deadline that they can meet. They can't meet after May 22nd. And so that's why they're pushing to get it done today. And the legislative day lasts till 7 in the morning, so they can work into the early morning tomorrow.
Well, Governor Ventura's communications director, John Woodley, has joined us at our broadcast table. Good afternoon, John.
Gary, Mike, welcome to the Capitol.
You look well-rested, or at least reasonably so, under the circumstances.
Well, hey, we're old hands at this. You know, we're experienced now, second year in a row.
Has the governor sharpened his veto pencil? Is there anything that he's targeting? It sounded like you folks were pretty unhappy with the transportation bill because it doesn't contain enough money for transit projects.
Well, transportation was an important issue for the governor from the get-go. As you recall, he provided an opportunity for the legislature to pass a plan that would give long-term funding, permanent long-term funding to transportation, something that the legislature hasn't done forever. And it would be very helpful if the legislature would take this opportunity to do it because the money is there to do it. They're not going to do that, obviously. They haven't done that, and so it is a little bit troubling. In the governor's original plan, we had said that we would like, you know, for the long term, that monies be divided 75-25 for transportation, highways, bridges, and 25% for transit. So in the bill that they are likely to pass, there's no money for transit, at least not the kind of money that the governor would appreciate. And so it was difficult to see this bill put together without enough money to do a busway.
Mm-hmm. Does that equal veto?
I can't really say that that would equal a veto. I know that there was some talk about the fact that it could possibly be vetoed without that transit money in there. But I think the safe thing to say is that we are hopeful that we can come up with this transit money through some other vehicle. Mm-hmm. And if these things can be worked out, everything would be hunky-dory.
It looks like that other vehicle is the bonding bill, right?
That's correct.
$25 million next year and another $19 million, and that's the money sort of left over from the $175 million.
From the $175 million, because we aren't going to be using all of the $175 million money for tabs in the first and second year.
Exactly. Now, Speaker Swigum told us that he's very upset about this. Ron Abrams, the House tax chair, called it the biggest abuse of the conference committee process he's seen in his 12 years here in the legislature. And Swigum said that there may not be the votes to pass the bonding bill.
You know, they have a responsibility to pass a bonding bill, and I'm sure that they will. There's a lot of rhetoric, obviously, that goes on this time of year, and everything is the biggest boondoggle, the biggest this, the biggest that, and we hear that every year. And that's not to disrespect a legislator and their feelings about a bill at this particular time. But I believe in the end that reason will prevail. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, consistently the people have demanded choices in transportation. I just can't for the life of me personally figure out what's going on in the House of Representatives that they are so anti-transit. But, you know, a mere 25% of the money to go to transit I think is reasonable and I think will prevail in the end.
Given the touchy nature of some of this, would it be better if the governor were here? He's in Washington right now trying to help get that trade bill with China passed. But given the politics and the personalities involved, wouldn't it be better if he were here to talk to these people personally?
Better? I don't know. I mean, the fact of the matter is that we have a governor, and this is his style. This is the way he works. He has to make judgments when he's invited to get involved in a White House event, a White House meeting having to do with an important thing like the normalization of trade with China. He has to make those choices, and he has decided that this is very, very important to the state of Minnesota. Normalization of trade with China will be a tremendous boon to our ag economy, not only to our ag economy, but to our medtech industries and other industries. We have companies that already trade with China. The opportunity to establish long-term trading relationships without a renewal due each year will enhance that ability. That's going to have a tremendous effect on Minnesota. The governor believes that he needs to be a part of this to make sure that this gets done. Now, that doesn't say that it's more important than the legislative session. But you know what? It's the new millennium. We got all these fancy things going on here. You guys are over at the Capitol, and you're broadcasting out to the state of Minnesota and the world. And you can literally be two places at once in this day and age.
What do you make of the fact that, to an outsider, it looks like the legislature is so distrustful of the governor that they're going to set aside a special day just to override any vetoes in case he tricks them in some way or other? What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, distrust of the governor. In the 8 years that Arne Carlson was governor, how many times did we hear that word? I mean, that's just the way it is around here. And I think especially since the governor is not a member of the two traditional parties, I think that it's good. They believe it's good politics for them to distance themselves and say this person is not trustworthy. The fact of the matter is they've done that to governors. The legislature has done that to governors forever, and they'll continue to do it when Jesse Ventura is gone.
Governor, one of his top priorities going into the session was the unicameral legislature, and in a way it's come up for a vote in the House, at least on a procedural motion. By this time tomorrow, will the unicameral legislative idea end up scheduled to be on the ballot?
I suppose it depends upon who you're listening to. Some people are saying the 68 votes are there, and others are saying it's not. And so we'll see. And interesting enough, I just had a call from a reporter from Tennessee, a Capitol reporter down there, that said that they have a unicameral bill that was just introduced and just was passed out of its first subcommittee, and there was the sighting of Minnesota on their during their committee reports.
Maybe they better wait another day or two.
Well, it was interesting. He had been reading a report in Governing magazine, I think it was, that said that the issue was dead here. And so I said, well, it's not quite dead.
Okay, thanks.
Nothing ever is until they're done.
Nothing ever is.
Thanks,
luck.
John. Appreciate
thanks
it.
For coming over.
John Woodley, who is Governor Ventura's communications director, joining us now at our broadcast table is State Senator Linda Berglund, who has been co-chairing the conference committee that's been working on that big bonding bill. Hi, Senator.
Hello.
Are you all done?
Well, we're still working in committee on amendments right now. We just got called up for a roll call vote, so I thought I'd just stop for a few minutes.
How big is it? How much are you planning to spend in terms of borrowed money projects?
The total amount of borrowed money is $450 million.
Mm-hmm. Pretty close to what has been targeted all along.
Right.
What about some of the items that we've heard so much about, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension building? The governor wanted full funding for that, $58 million, I believe it was. Is that in the bill?
It is.
And University of Minnesota had a number of projects. One we heard a lot about here in the last couple of weeks was the arts building at the University of Minnesota. Is that in the bill?
Yes, it is.
And the Guthrie Theater we heard about. Initially, they wanted $25 million. That was scaled back to $10 million. Is that in this bill?
There's $3 million for planning for the Guthrie Theater in the bill.
Mm-hmm. What's not in the bill that people were so eager to have included?
Well,
what are you going to take some heat on?
One of the biggest disappointments to myself, as well as all of the conference committee members, I think, on both sides, was our inability to manage to fit in the request from public television for assistance in their effort and requirement to convert to digital transmitting. And I'm hopeful that we will be able to find a way to help them in the near future, but it just wasn't going to be possible in this bill.
House Speaker Sligum was here earlier and said that because there's now money in the bonding bill for this busway that the governor wanted to include in the bonding bill, that he doesn't think the bill is going to pass the House. What happens then?
Well, I certainly would hope the members of the House would understand that this amendment is one of the prerogatives that the governor has taken with his $175 million to fund an initiative that was very important to him in regard to transit. And I would hope also that there would be the recognition that these funds that he's making available, since they were not able to be in the transportation bill, if we have them and it passes in another bill, we'll make it easier for that transportation bill to get signed by the governor.
Mm-hmm. Finally, Senator, there's been a lot of talk, especially the last few weeks, about the need for the state to invest in a number of projects and a number of fronts to try to make sure that we remain competitive long term. Are those the kinds of projects that are included in your bill? Have you focused mostly short-term, or have you got some things that, you know, 20 years from now, people will say, boy, they put that in there, and that really opened the door for new development in Minnesota?
Well, our bill that we'll be bringing to the floor today is a very strong bill in regard to education. And we have, almost, if not over, $300 million of the dollars are for education projects. Many of the projects for the Minsky system relate to science and technology buildings. We have the genomics building funded for the University of Minnesota that's in the bill. So I believe it is a step in the right direction in terms of making educational opportunities for a stronger future for Minnesota.
Thanks, Senator. Appreciate you joining us.
You're welcome.
Minneapolis DFL State Senator Linda Berglund, co-chair of the conference committee that has been working on the big bonding bill, the capital investments program, which Mike Mulcahy is essentially the whole point of this even year session.
That's right. And there is this threat from the House Republicans that they won't vote for it because of this money the governor put in. I guess we'll have to see if that happens. But I know that the House chairman of the bonding conference committee was pretty happy with the bill, Jim Knobloch from St. Cloud. He said it was a pretty good bill, and he thought he could get the votes for it, but that was sort of a little bit before some of this furor erupted over the governor's transit plan.
Joining us now at our broadcast table here at the state capitol is State Senator Doug Johnson, who is the chair of the Senate Tax Committee, longtime chair, what, 20 years, Senator?
That's right, 20 years, a couple decades.
Uh-huh. Well, now you get to moved on, shuffled off to something else next year. So this is kind of your last year as tax chair?
Well, as I told the conferees last night and those in the audience, don't bury my body yet. things could always change. I guess there's two decisions that have to be made. First, my constituents have to think I should be reelected. Number two, don't count me out.
Now, Senator, as I understand it, you actually held your nose when you voted for the tax bill. Is it that bad? I mean, you know, again, as an outsider, you look at this, gee, a big rebate, so taxpayers will get something, and then there's a permanent income tax cut. There's some money for farm property tax relief, an increase in the working family tax credit, the license tab fee reductions. Oh, all in all, a little something for everyone, right?
Well, the way I measure a tax cut and have through now 20 years is, do we have a tax system that is fair or less fair or fairer when all is said and done? And I'm convinced that this particular tax bill, the way the income tax and the license tabs are distributed, that it benefits the highest income people in Minnesota at the expense of the middle and low income people. So I don't think it meets the fairness test. And I told the conference committee that through my many years of voting in elections, I've always voted for Democrats in statewide races. There were two times I had to hold my nose as I did it, and I couldn't vote for this bill without holding my nose because of the fact that I don't think it's as fair as we could have done.
If you would have had that $175 million to cut taxes with, what would you have done?
Well, the first thing that I would have done was increase the personal dependent exemption. That is an amount that's held steady for many years in Minnesota. It's a lot fairer to working families, particularly with children, than cutting the three tax rates as the House Republicans wanted to do. I think the license tab proposal also could have been fair. I do support cutting license tabs, but only about 50% of those who own cars and pickups in Minnesota will get a cut, and I don't think the other 50% know that the way the administration designed that tab cut, that half of them won't even get a reduction in their car pickup license fees. So it's about fairness, and this bill is not as fair as it could be. I think the rebate's good. Certainly the farm property tax relief is good. But with all of this money, we could have had a better bill for middle-income Minnesotans.
Senator, you've seen a lot over the years. The reason that Minnesotans, for the fourth straight year now, will get some form of a tax rebate is because the revenue forecasts have been so far off the mark, and as a consequence, these surpluses have been building up. Have legislators cut the budget now too close to the bone so that if the errors start coming in on the other side of the fence there, we're going to have to raise taxes in the next couple of years?
Well, unlike the early years of Elkhuis' administration, we have developed healthy budget surpluses and set aside some in the bank. We have almost $1 billion in reserves that are not spent or used for tax cuts this year. So there's a lot more, I think, fiscal conservatism in the way we write the budgets today. So, but if there's a recession, we'll have trouble. But we've got a lot of safety nets in place we didn't have in the past.
Yeah, and in general, sir, how would you, last year everybody was declaring victory after the session, saying this tripartisan arrangement worked pretty good. Would you say that this year?
Well, you know, that's what will happen. If the governor gets back from Washington, I think that's later today.
Yeah.
Probably either late tonight or sometime tomorrow, you'll see the governor and Svigum and Moe all hugs and kisses. It's part of the I've been here 30 years, and they do it every year. And you know, with tripartisan government, we're the only state in the country that really is undergoing this, and there have to be those compromises. I think we could have done it fairer, though, and unfortunately that didn't happen.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate it. And we won't bury you yet.
Thank you.
Senate Tax Committee Chair Doug Johnson joining us here at our broadcast table. Now, while we've been on the air, Mike Mulcahy, the House has been debating the unicameral legislative proposal. This is the proposal that would move Minnesota from a two-house legislature to a one-house legislature. Actually, it wouldn't even do that. It would put it on the ballot in November so that voters could decide whether they wanted to move to the one-house legislature.
Amend the Constitution. Let the voters amend the Constitution. It's been going nowhere in the House, or in the Senate, I should say. It's been pretty much dead on the Senate side. In the House, Steve Swigum, the Speaker, and some of the leadership think it's a good idea, and they've been pushing it a little bit harder. It came out of the Rules Committee yesterday in the House, And I believe the motion on the floor was to send it back to the committee, either the Rules Committee or the Ways and Means Committee, you know, mm-hmm. which would effectively kill it for the session.
Mm-hmm. And let's pick up part of that debate. Here's a Republican Representative Dennis Osmond of Rosemont speaking in favor of voting on this unicameral bill.
Of the Ways and Means Committee try to take away the ability of the Speaker of the House to bring a bill forward. I would like you to let the people have a vote. I would like the people's representatives to have a vote on the bill, clean, straight up, straight down. Either it goes on the ballot or it doesn't. But don't kill it through process. Don't kill it through procedure. Do it honorably if that's what you need to do, and let us have a vote. Let the people speak, and let the people's representatives speak. Do not stifle this House through process.
There. The member from...
Mr. Speaker.
If there is any further outburst from the audience, the people who are applauding in the audience will be removed by the sergeant at arms. The member from St. Louis, Representative Rukavina.
Well, members and Representative Osmond, maybe my memory doesn't serve me correctly, but I believe on this floor of this House one day, Representative Luther had a bill that had a zero fiscal implication that was pulled by Representative Molyneux back to transportation finance because she said there was some sort of small fiscal impact. So, Representative Osmond, don't be so outraged. The outrage here should be with what Representative Tuma talked about and what Representative Bishop, I saw him talking about yesterday. The outrage should be the fact that the process that has been used to resurrect this bill continually. And Representative Carruthers, it's funny how things come around here on the House floor, because I remember one day talking about killing a bill and you got so upset. And today you use those words, Representative Carruthers, kill a bill for the session. And this bill was killed how many times already, Representative Carruthers? You know, members, this is a bill, I think, that kills democracy, but the reason I'm going to vote with Representative Bishop today is plain and simple. We got a governor that has pushed this, a governor that cares about this so much that the last day of session, when it's crunch time, he's out in Washington promoting himself again. That's the problem here. We got no direction on this issue. You never have. And I think it's about time, Representative Carruthers, that we do kill it, because the guy pushing it doesn't give a damn about it. Why should we?
That was State Representative Tom Rukavina, and it has now been sent to committee on a 76-54 vote. And Mike Mulcahy, I assume that means, at least according to Speaker Swigum's interpretation earlier, that the unicameral proposal is once and for all, finally, dead.
I always hate to say once and for all, finally, until they actually adjourn the session. But that vote does send the unicameral bill to the House Ways and Means Committee, and that committee is chaired by Republican Representative Dave Bishop of Rochester, who is, if not the biggest opponent of letting the people vote on this unicameral vote, one of the biggest opponents. And so I think it's pretty fair to say that'll be bottled up there, and it probably won't come back to the House floor.
And even if it did, then it would still have to get past the Senate, where opposition is even stiffer to the unicameral proposal.
Absolutely.
We are broadcasting live from the Minnesota State Capitol. We're in the rotunda today. Minnesota legislators are back at work. They have been very, very busy these last few days putting together the details of these big, big bills that we've been talking about for the last many weeks. The tax bill, the education bill, the bonding bill, unicameral has been talked about. Transportation, do we mention that? The social service spending bill, on and on. And today during midday, we're broadcasting live, talking with many of the key legislators involved in these issues to try to get a better idea of just what's in the bills, what's likely to pass. The House and Senate will be voting on all these measures through the afternoon and well into the night as well. We'll continue our coverage here from the state capitol in just a couple of minutes. But right now, let's catch up on news headlines. Here's Greta Cunningham. Greta?
Thanks, Gary. Good afternoon. Republican presidential candidate George W. Bush has picked up an important endorsement today. His former rival for the GOP nomination, John McCain, says he is going to campaign enthusiastically for Bush. McCain says the two agree on more issues than they disagree on. McCain says he does not want to be considered as a running mate for Bush. President Clinton said today that a vote to reject trade ties with China would abandon the legacy of American leadership over the last 50 years. He calls the vote to normalize trade relations the most important Congress will cast this year. Clinton says the U.S. economy will suffer if Congress does not vote to normalize trade relations. Clinton's remarks were supported by a gathering of former presidents, secretaries of state, and cabinet members spanning three decades in the White House. Governor Ventura is at the White House today to take part in the trade talks. Researchers in North Carolina say dust mites and cockroaches are triggering more asthma and allergy attacks than people may think. Their research finds that more than 45% of U.S. homes could be affected. This year's winner of the National Basketball Association's Most Valuable Player Award is going to L.A. Lakers center Shaquille O'Neal. A source says O'Neal finished just one vote shy of becoming the first player unanimously named MVP in the NBA history. Allen Iverson of the Philadelphia 76ers received the other vote. In regional news, a new commission looking at health care services for dying patients holds its first meeting in St. Paul today. The Minnesota Health Department is teaming up with health care providers to develop recommendations for improving the quality of care provided to terminal patients. The forecast for Minnesota today calls for partly cloudy skies statewide. High temperatures today ranging from 60 in the north to near 70 in the south. At this hour in Rochester, fair skies reported a temperature of 56. It's sunny in St. Cloud and 56. Duluth reports sunshine and 53 degrees. And in the Twin Cities at this hour, partly cloudy skies, a temperature of 60 degrees. Gary, that's a look at the latest news.
Thanks, Greta. About 27 minutes now before 1 o'clock, midday, coming to you live from the Minnesota State Capitol. We're in the Rotunda. Mike Mulcahy has joined us here at the broadcast table, and we've been speaking with several key legislators on what amounts to the last day of the legislative session. Now, technically, this is not the last day. They will be meeting tomorrow morning, but it still counts as today. And then, plus which, they're scheduled now to come back next Wednesday to take up any veto overrides, should that be necessary. So they get a second chance. If the governor vetoes something that's passed here in this last day, then they could come back and conceivably override that veto. But for all practical purposes, this is the day when legislators are voting on all the big bills, the tax bill, the education bill, the transportation bill, unicameral, and the rest. In case you tuned in late, in terms of taxes, subject dear to most people's hearts, you should know that another tax rebate is going to be approved, $658 million, about half as large as last year, but it does include more people, basically everybody who filed a 1998 income tax form, owned property, or rented an apartment in 1998. That includes quite a few more people, about 120,000 more than received last year's sales tax rebate. The checks will be in the mail in August. In addition to that, that tax bill includes some small permanent income tax cuts, the actual dollar amounts ranging from about $15 to a little over $1,400, depends on how much you pay initially. There's about a 4% cut in the farm property tax relief, farm property tax, I should say. There's an increase for people at the bottom end of the scale. Working family tax credit is going to be expanded by about $10 million, so folks at the bottom will be able to get more money back from the state. And, of course, included in that tax bill are the license tab fee reductions that Governor Ventura has been pushing. There are lots of other big issues as well. One issue, Mike Mulcahy, that we heard so much about at the beginning of the legislative session, and then it sort of fell off the radar screen, privacy. There were a whole raft of bills which said that the state of Minnesota, the government, was going to protect us from predators.
Right.
What happened?
Right, and even the Democrats held a press conference before the session to say this was going to be one of their top legislative priorities. And frankly, none of the bills has moved very fast, although the Senate today has scheduled to take up four different bills involving privacy. One would regulate what banks can do in this area. Another would look at the whole field of telemarketing. There's another one that covers internet privacy. And I think those bills are probably likely to pass. There was a lot of lobbying going on around this, especially from we heard a lot from the banks, the small town banks, saying that this is a bad idea because it will really restrict how banks can do business. There are a lot of questions about the internet. There are questions whether this should be a national fix or a local fix. But it looks like the Senate is going to try to pass some of these bills and maybe send them over to the House and see if the House is willing to take a vote on them today. So that's something we'll watch for. There are a couple other issues, sort of sleeper issues out there that we haven't heard too much about. The abortion issue, of course, made big news earlier in the session. The so-called Women's Right to Know bill that would have required a 24-hour waiting period before a woman could have an abortion. The governor, it actually reached the governor's desk. He vetoed it, upset some of the members of the House who thought they had an agreement with the governor's staff that he would sign the bill. That could come up in some other form today while we're not paying too close attention. So that's the kind of thing you have to keep your ears open on as they have other time in between passing some of these big bills. Mm-hmm. You know, Gary, it's fun to do this on the last day because you get a sense of some of the personalities involved, too. And I just saw Harry Mayers walk by our table. He went to the hospital early this morning, got quite sick, apparently, and he was passing a kidney stone, they told us later. And he's up and around and among the living again, so I guess that's good news for him.
Well, Senator Larry Pogemiller has joined us, Minneapolis DFLer, and he's the Senate representative on the Education Conference Committee. Representative Mayers in good shape now? Or?
I have actually not seen him this morning, but apparently I was just told I had to take up a bill that he and I have conferred, so I think he wants to finish that bill and then maybe go home for the day.
Well, I guess, Senator, we were reporting earlier during the broadcast on the funding increases, but... what about the profile of learning? Where does that stand? I suppose to set the stage again, we should point out that a lot of people said that if the profile of learning graduation standard isn't changed this year, it could very well just collapse because of all the criticism, all the problems people have had in trying to keep it going, implement it, and so on. Last year, you folks were unable to come up with a modification of the basic program. When was it? Friday, we were talking with you and Representative Ness, and it sounded like everybody was on the same page. Everything was hunky-dory, but here we are. Is there any agreement yet on how to change the profile of learning?
There is. Representative Ness and I, by and large, have had the details of the proposal put together for weeks. Representative Ness has not called a meeting since a week ago, Monday. As you recall, on Friday he had gone home for the weekend, and he still has not called a meeting. Yesterday the Speaker and the Majority Leader, Svigum and Pawlenty, met with Senator Moe and myself and the Commissioner of Education and had three items they wanted fixed. We immediately worked with the Commissioner and fixed three out of four. And there's one provision left that the Senate has offered to compromise on, so they could have four out of four of their provisions. And for some reason, there's still not a conference committee called.
So what's going on?
Bottom line, Representative Pawlenty, Majority Leader of the House, is going to make a decision whether it is better politics for his caucus to have no bill or to compromise with the Senate and the governor.
Can the profile of learning graduation standard survive for another year without some significant modifications?
The state's been working about a decade to significantly increase standards, and it's pretty deeply embedded now in the system in terms of pushing standards up. Seems to me the only issue is the implementation process going to be smooth for faculty and students and families? And a bill this year would significantly help that smooth implementation, would be less costly if we passed a bill because you smooth implementation. And so we badly need a bill. It'd be in the best interest of education. And we're hoping that Majority Leader Pawlenty puts public policy and the children of the state above politics.
Now we should note, by the way, that Representative Pawlenty was unable to come by our broadcast table today.
How important is it to get a profile bill passed today for the Senate? I mean, could this the end of the...
The Senate will pass a profile bill. It will pass a standards bill. We have several things in place. We've been working closely with the governor and the administration and the Commissioner of Education. We hope to finish the conference committee report if the House conferees will ever call a conference committee meeting. But if they don't, we are in a position to provide several options to the House of Representatives in bill form from the Senate.
And you'll just send them over, and it'll be up to them to explain why they did or did not pass?
Our preference is to finish the conference committee. But as I say, we've been waiting for over a week to have a meeting, and the House has the authority to call the meeting. The Senate can't force a meeting right now. And all we need is a meeting. The bill would be signed. Representative Otremba, there are three conferees on each side. Representative Otremba on the House side is willing to sign the conference committee report. It's simply a question of Representative Ness and Representative Kukielski signing the conference committee report. But all three conferees, Democrats and Republicans on the Senate side, Commissioner of Education supports the conference committee, and we ought to get it done.
Back to the money aspect here, Senator. The total amount, I've heard varying numbers on how much additional money, either one-time or permanent additional money, is going to be spent on K-12 education. What's the actual number?
120 permanent and 67 one-time. But out of the 120 permanent, about $13 million was turned into one-time money in the first year. So that's how I would calculate it, I'd say.
And what does all that money buy? By the schools and children of Minnesota?
Well, there's strategic investments. It's a non-budget year, so it's a modest package relative to education spending.
Right.
It's an $8 billion bill, budget normally, and so this is only a $180 million package. But it's a non-budget year, but strategic investments in professional development, best practices, teaching methods. The research is pretty strong that that can really improve results. Special education, money to pay off some of the mandated commitments in special education, free up money for class size and technology. There's also a significant technology provision to help high-speed internet access to all the schools in the state. And then those are all permanent money. And then there's one-time money for deferred maintenance for our schools, significant $22 or $23 million there. And then about $30 million for a training experience fix. There were unexpected retirements of teachers in the last year or two, and so we need to put a little money back into the school districts on a one-time basis to soften the retirements for the districts to protect their budgets for class sizes and so forth.
Senator, as you know, there's a school of thought out there that says that given the importance of education to the state of Minnesota and given the fact that so many school districts, despite last year's big increase, have to cut their budgets and are laying off teachers and are continuing to have financial problems, it is irresponsible of the legislature to be giving back tax rebates and this, that, and the other thing, that you folks ought to be spending this money on education, K-12 education.
Well, I don't know if the word's irresponsible, but I believe we're doing too much. Relatively, we're doing too much tax relief. I think we should be doing more investment in education, higher K-12 and early childhood. But we're doing significant amounts of educational investment this year. I just think it should have been a little higher.
Thanks, Senator. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you very much.
Minneapolis DFL State Senator Larry Pogemiller, who is the chair of the Senate's K-12 Finance Committee. And once again, to recap there on the education front, spending part of the education bill, how much additional money will be spent on K-12 education, that's been agreed, $287 million total, but still up in the air is what's going to happen with the profile of learning.
And Gary, I think Senator Pogemiller had to leave to go back to the Senate floor. I think there's another school of thought around here at the Capitol, probably the minority school of thought, but I think something we saw during the Carlson administration that says spending money on schools is a little like pouring it down a bottomless pit, because the money keeps being put into schools, and then we've seen these test scores, especially in Minneapolis and St. Paul, get a little better but not a lot better, and there doesn't seem to be much of a relation between how much money you actually spend and how well the kids do on the tests. And so I think there would be some, especially maybe in the House Republican caucus, who would argue that there should be more accountability attached to the money we spend on schools, and maybe less money spent and more money put into those tax cuts. I think that's where they might be coming from, especially in the second year of the biennium when you've already set a budget and there's surplus money and it's just over and above what you've already agreed to spend.
We're broadcasting live from the Minnesota State Capitol today, the State Capitol Rotunda. Mike Mulcahy has joined us here at our broadcast table. We're talking with key legislators involved in the big bills that you've heard so much about, the issues that you've heard so much about these last several weeks, taxes, education, transportation, and the rest. Today is decision day for legislators. Today, the full House and the full Senate vote on these big bills that have been put together, glued together, the House version and the Senate version. The differences have been worked out, mostly. And now the full House and Senate are voting on these bills. They can't amend the bills, but they can refuse to pass them. And then what happens? You know, like House Speaker Swigum was mentioning, well, he doesn't know if this bonding bill is going to pass. So let's say that it doesn't pass. Then what happens?
Well, a couple things could happen, because, again, nothing's dead until they actually adjourn, sine die. They could send it back to the conference committee and try to work out something, take that money of the governor's out. They could appoint new conferees. They could, or they could end up without a bonding bill, which is a distinct possibility. I don't think anyone would like to see that after working this long and this hard on it, any of the legislators anyway. But it's possible. It could happen. It's happened before to bills. We heard Senator Pogamiller say that if they can't reach an agreement with the House on the profile of learning bill, the Senate might just pass its own version of the bill and send it over to the House. I think during the Gulf War they came to call that sort of sending a scud over from one House to the other, and that's what they do. And these privacy bills may turn into scuds too. They would send those over and try to embarrass the House into taking a vote that they could use then during the campaign to say, they don't want to protect your privacy or whatever. And so that kind of thing often happens on the last day.
Mike, you have been up here and watched many, many of these legislative sessions unfold. There is a perception, I think, out and about that much of what happens up here is, in fact, geared to the next election. Governor Ventura has made that charge repeatedly, that many, many decisions that are made at the state legislature are made with the next election in mind. Is that a fair criticism?
I think it's fair to a certain extent, but being reelected isn't necessarily a bad thing, I guess. I think that there's a combination. A lot of people think that if they do the right thing philosophically, that will be good politics and they will be reelected. And I think it's pretty clear what we've been seeing as what the messages are going to be as they go into the fall here. I think the Democrats are going to say, we supported this balanced approach. Yes, we wanted to cut some taxes, but we also wanted to put more money into education, which is very politically popular, and it helps them with the core group of their constituents, the teachers' unions. We wanted to put some money into the environment. That helps with, again, that's something that the state needs, and it helps with some constituents. And they wanted to put some money into health care and some senior citizen drug programs and things like that. On the House side, we see them saying, we've got these taxes are just out of control in Minnesota, and when there's extra surplus money, we should cut the taxes. And if you elect the Republicans, that's what we're going to do. We didn't get everything we wanted this time, but we had to work with that DFL Senate and that independent governor. But if you elect more Republicans, we'll go up there and we'll cut taxes. And so that's pretty much the way they've laid it out. On the other hand, if there's a Republican in a district where they like education, they can say, well, yeah, we voted to cut the taxes, but we voted to increase the spending on education, too. So part of this three-way split gives everybody a little something to run on. And, the times are so good, it looks like the real challenge is for the parties in the minority in both the House and Senate. How do the Senate Republicans put out their message, or how do the House Democrats put out their message to try to win control back? I think that's sort of the political question that interests me right now, but...
Mike Mulcahy, who is our political editor here at Minnesota Public Radio, joining us now at our broadcast table is State Senator Amber Reichstadt-Young, who is Assistant Majority Leader, DFLer from New Hope. On your last legislative session, how's it compare? Is this a good one?
It's a great one. We're getting all of our stuff done in one day. I don't think I've ever seen that happen before. No, this is a very good day, and I hope we'll bring out all of the major bills today.
You have been trying to get some privacy legislation through this last day. Where does that stand at this point?
Well, there will be some privacy issues brought up today with regard to privacy of your financial information and making sure that you give permission before banks and others can give that information away. I personally have a bill that creates a do not call list that may come up either today or the next day that we come into session. And that would allow you to put your name on a list so that you could have some freedom from telemarketers during your dinner hour or any other time. And we're hoping that we can pass that yet, like I say, either today if there's time or the next day we're back in session.
Prospects in the House, how would you rate that?
Well, I found that for a do not call list, there's a tremendous amount of support in the public for that. I think the polls show like 85% support. So I would be hopeful that the House would pick up that bill and pass it into law. All we're doing is creating an option, a choice for people to put their name on that list. Doesn't cost the state a lot of money. It's a nominal fee to put your name on the list. It's a win-win. And that way, people who work during the day, work during the evening and want to sleep during the day, people who just don't want to be bothered by telemarketers could have that choice to have the privacy in their home.
Now, when the session began, there was a whole raft of privacy bills being talked about. What happened to all the rest of them?
Well, they're all coming up either today or the next day. We have a large privacy package, and we are passing bills right now on the Senate floor with regard to Internet privacy, and that's being debated right now. Senator Steve Kelly is the author of that. To, again, ensure, you know, with the changing technology, our laws haven't kept up. And that's the problem. We've got to make sure that our financial and other personal information is protected. And his bills are not even controversial at this point. I mean, these are just some basic steps we have to do to make our laws keep up with the times, I guess.
Why did it take until now to bring these bills up?
There was some confusion between the House and the Senate as to whether we wanted to package them in one bill or do them separately. So I think now you'll see a lot of activity on these, particularly after the budget bills pass and we have a little bit of extra time while we're waiting for the governor to decide about vetoes.
And you keep saying, if not today, the next day. Is there a next day? Well, I thought this was it.
This is the big day, but we hope to recess to another time so that we can come back and do any overrides on vetoes, mm-hmm. if there are such, by the governor. So that might mean a day next week. But there's two more days that we can act on bills or override vetoes, and those will be the days that we'll probably have some other legislative work to be done.
Thanks, Senator. Appreciate you joining us.
Well, thank you for asking.
State Senator Amber Reichgott Young joining us here at our broadcast table. Senator Bob Lassard has joined us. He is the chair of the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee. Good afternoon, Senator.
How are you doing?
Good.
Better than us, I hope.
Not as tired. We haven't been working as hard. I know you wanted to get a constitutional amendment passed, which would dedicate some of the sales tax to natural resources projects. I assume that's dead, but there is a provision in the Senate bill or in the conference committee bill that would set aside $25 million from lottery proceeds for DNR purposes, parks and trails and the rest. Is that going to make a significant difference here in Minnesota?
Well, let me just back up a little bit. On the constitutional amendment, the reason that didn't pass wasn't because it didn't have lack of support. We funded metro parks, which they need desperately. We funded state parks and trails. We funded our zoos, and we funded our trail system, and not to mention, of course, the hunting and fishing and provision allotment of 45% going to the Game and Fish Fund. The fact is that it's just plain right out of time. There's some people who don't want constitutional amendments, but you have to remember, I think, that it took 4 years to pass my constitutional amendment to hunt and fish, and that passed by 77%. And I, on this particular piece of legislation, constitutional amendment, I had more support for that than I did the other. So sometimes it takes some time. It'll be back before the people. I think the people are going to demand it. Now, to go back to the second part, last year I tried to amend the Game and Fish Bill to take the 6.5% lottery proceeds and dedicate it to Game and Fish and to state parks and some other initiatives. That failed by 6 votes. This year we do have that in place, and that's included in another bill that's passing. And what it'll do is it'll give money to our state parks and trails, our metro parks, and our Game and Fish Fund. So I was somewhat successful. I passed last year. This year, what I wouldn't say will pass last year. Is $25 million enough? Absolutely not. But it's a very significant step, and it's one step at a time.
Everybody on the same page now on the wolf issue, the wolf management issue?
I think the House is a bill that left here. It's over in the House. I think they'll take it in total. That should be taken care of. So that should pass. I don't anticipate anything at the House will pass it. It's just as we passed it here.
Is that the one that sets up the two zones?
Exactly. It sets up two zones, and basically it takes care of some of the problems in the Farm District. It doesn't do as much as I would have liked in Zone 1, which is what we call A, now they changed the zone type of deal, but it does allow some more latitude in our zone, not what we would have liked, but the fact is that everybody's benefit to get it delisted. We did it. it's over, and unless something happens, you never know what's going to happen in the House election. All right, you know, Ember said, you know, but we think it'll pass. So in that context, so far it's been successful. Have I been happy with? I failed with my big initiative, but there's always another day.
Senator, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Senator Bob Lessard, chairman of the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee. And, in fact, on the natural resources front, Mike Mulcahy, as I understand it, there are provisions now to increase hunting and fishing license fees to raise a little more money for fishing and hunting, plus the $25 million that would be dedicated from lottery proceeds for parks and trails and the rest.
And that's in that supplemental spending bill, the big garbage bill, so we'll have to see if they can get a deal done on the whole bill to get those up. You know, I meant to ask Senator Young this, but when we were talking with Senator Lessard about the constitutional amendment, I don't think there will be any constitutional amendments this year, which I think is a little bit unusual. You probably remember better than I do, but it seems like every 2 years, there's always some ballot initiative. But
usually there's one that gets through, but not this year, apparently.
I don't see one alive right now, but I may be missing something. But, you know, the unicameral got so much debate and attention, and the hunting and fishing sales tax dedication, those were sort of the two big ones, and I don't think either one of them are going to make it.
So the tax bill looks to be like it will sail through. Transportation may get vetoed by the governor. Education, the funding bill is in good shape, but still no agreement on profile of learning. The bonding bill, everybody's agreed to that, but House Speaker Steve Sligum says it may not pass the House because of this provision that the governor has inserted, which would provide money for a busway.
Right.
And that's
that makes the Republicans mad because they thought the governor was going to spend his entire share of the $175 million to cut tabs or cut taxes, and now he's spending more money, and they don't like that.
Unicameral is dead, right?
Looks that way right now.
Get lost on a key vote today,
right,
in the Minnesota House. And the catch-all bill, the social services spending bill, that one is still negotiation.
Still working on that one.
But that includes money, among other things, for affordable housing, prescription drug benefit expansion for senior citizens. It includes that expansion of the working families tax credit, has some money for child care subsidies.
Nursing home workers.
It truly is a catch-all. Now, legislators will be meeting through the rest of the day, on into the night,
early morning.
And then they go home and then come back next week to deal with possible veto overrides. Is that right?
That is the plan as we speak.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate you joining us.
No problem.
Minnesota Public Radio's political editor, Mike Mulcahy, joining us during today's midday broadcast. And that does it for our special live coverage here from the state capitol. Sarah Meyer, as always, produced our coverage. Our engineer here at the state capitol, Steve Griffith. Randy Johnson back at the studio, also help from Gennaro Vasquez. Production assistance as well from Eugene Shaw, Julie Seipel, Amy Radel, and Michael Koo. That does it for midday today. Gary Eichten here. Thanks so much for tuning in. Check out All Things Considered tonight for continuing coverage. Check out our website and join us for midday tomorrow.
I'm Lorna Benson on the next All Things Considered. Author Terry Tempest Williams turns a personal obsession with a 15th century painting into the basis for her new novel, Leap. It's All Things Considered, weekdays at 3 on Minnesota Public Radio.
Partly cloudy skies, 60 degrees at KNOW-FM, 91.1 Minneapolis and St. Paul. Partly cloudy through the afternoon. Might warm up another 5 degrees or so. Clear skies are forecast for tonight with a low in the 40s. And then tomorrow, partly cloudy sky, high temperature tomorrow in the low 70s, maybe some rain on Thursday and Friday.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Juan Williams, and this is Talk of the Nation. 9 years ago this summer, Russian President Boris Yeltsin faced down a coup by communist hardliners.